Random House Audio presents Dear Life by Alice Munro. Read for you by Kimberly Farr and Arthur Morey. To Reach Japan. Once Peter had brought her suitcase on board the train, he seemed eager to get himself out of the way. But not to leave. He explained to her that he was just uneasy that the train should start to move. Out on the platform, looking up at their window, he stood waving, smiling, waving. The smile for Katie was wide open, sunny, without a doubt in the world, as if he believed that she would continue to be a marvel to him, and he to her, forever. The smile for his wife seemed hopeful and trusting, with some sort of determination about it. Something that could not easily be put into words, and indeed might never be. If Greta had mentioned such a thing, he would have said, "Don't be ridiculous." And she would have agreed with him, thinking that it was unnatural for people who saw each other daily, constantly, to have to go through explanations of any kind. When Peter was a baby, his mother had carried him across some mountains whose name Greta kept forgetting, in order to get out of Soviet Czechoslovakia into Western Europe. There were other people, of course. Peter's father had intended to be with them, but he had been sent to a sanatorium just before the date for the secret departure. He was to follow them when he could, but he died instead. "I've read stories like that," Greta said when Peter first told her about this. She explained how, in the stories, the baby would start to cry and invariably had to be smothered or strangled so that the noise did not endanger the whole illegal party. Peter said he had never heard such a story and would not say what his mother would have done in such circumstances. What she did do was get to British Columbia, where she improved her English and got a job teaching what was then called business practice to high school students. She brought up Peter on her own and sent him to college, and now he was an engineer. When she came to their apartment, and later to their house, she always sat in the front room, never coming into the kitchen unless Greta invited her. That was her way. She carried not noticing to an extreme. Not noticing, not intruding, not suggesting, though in every single household skill or art she left her daughter-in-law far behind. Also, she got rid of the apartment where Peter had been brought up and moved into a smaller one with no bedroom, just room for a fold-out couch. "So Peter can't go home to Mother?" Greta teased her, but she seemed startled. Jokes pained her. Maybe it was a problem of language. But English was her usual language now, and indeed the only language Peter knew. He had learned business practice, though not from his mother, when Greta was learning Paradise Lost. She avoided anything useful like the plague. It seemed he did the opposite. With the glass between them, and Katie never allowing the waving to slow down, they indulged in looks of comic, or indeed insane, goodwill. She thought how nice-looking he was, and how he seemed to be so unaware of it. He wore a brush cut, in the style of the time, particularly if you were anything like an engineer, and his light-colored skin was never flushed like hers, never blotchy from the sun, but evenly tanned, whatever the season. His opinions were something like his complexion. When they went to see a movie, he never wanted to talk about it afterwards. He would say that it was good, or pretty good, or okay. He didn't see the point in going further. He watched television. He read a book in somewhat the same way. He had patience with such things. The people who put them together were probably doing the best they could. Greta used to argue, rashly asking whether he would say the same thing about a bridge. The people who did it did their best, but their best was not good enough, so it fell down. Instead of arguing, he just laughed. It was not the same thing, he said.
No?
No. Greta should have realized that this attitude, hands-off, tolerant, was a blessing for her because she was a poet, and there were things in her poems that were in no way cheerful or easy to explain. Peter's mother and the people he worked with, those who knew about it, still said poetess. She had trained him not to. Otherwise, no training necessary. The relatives she had left behind in her life and the people she knew now in her role as a housewife and mother did not have to be trained because they knew nothing about this peculiarity. It would become hard to explain, later on in her life, just what was okay in that time and what was not. You might say, well, feminism was not. But then you would have to explain that feminism was not even a word people used. Then you would get all tied up saying that having any serious idea, let alone ambition, or maybe even reading a real book, could be seen as suspect, having something to do with your child's getting pneumonia, and a political remark at an office party might have cost your husband his promotion. It would not have mattered which political party either. It was a woman's shooting off her mouth that did it. People would laugh and say, oh, surely you are joking. And you would have to say, well, but not that much. Then she would say, one thing, though, was that if you were writing poetry, it was somewhat safer to be a woman than a man. That was where the word poetess came in handy, like a web of spun sugar. Peter would not have felt that way, she said, but remember, he had been born in Europe. He would have understood, though, how the men he worked with were supposed to feel about such things. That summer, Peter was going to spend a month, or maybe longer, in charge of a job that was being done at Lund, far up, in fact, as far as you could go north, on the mainland. There was no accommodation for Katie and Greta. But Greta had kept in touch with a girl she used to work with in the Vancouver library, who was married now and living in Toronto. She and her husband were going to spend a month in Europe that summer. He was a teacher. And she had written Greta wondering if Greta and her family would do them a favor, she was very polite, by occupying the house in Toronto for part of that time, not letting it stand empty. And Greta had written back telling her about Peter's job, but taking up the offer for Katie and herself. That was why they were now waving and waving from the platform and from the train. There was a magazine then, called The Echo Answers, published irregularly in Toronto. Greta had found it in the library and sent them some poems. Two of the poems had been published, and the result was that when the editor of the magazine came to Vancouver last fall, she had been invited to a party, with other writers, to meet him. The party was at the house of a writer whose name had been familiar to her, it seemed, for her whole life. It was held in the late afternoon when Peter was still at work, so she hired a sitter and set off on the North Vancouver bus across Lions Gate Bridge and through Stanley Park. Then she had to wait in front of the Hudson's Bay for a long ride out to the university campus, which was where the writer lived. Let off at the bus's last turning, she found the street and walked along, peering at house numbers. She was wearing high heels, which slowed her down considerably. Also, her most sophisticated black dress, zipped up at the back and skimming the waist, and always a little too tight at the hips. It made her look somewhat ridiculous, she thought, as she stumbled slightly along the curving streets with no sidewalks, the only person about in the waning afternoon. Modern houses, picture windows, as in any up-and-coming suburb, not at all the kind of neighborhood she had expected. She was beginning to wonder if she had got the street wrong, and was not unhappy to think that. She could go back to the bus stop where there was a bench. She could slip off her shoes and settle down for the long, solitary ride home. But when she saw the cars parked, saw the number...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?